This is the current federal tax developments for the week of May the 16th, 2016. Current federal tax developments, as always, is brought to you by your State Society of CPAs and Nichols Patrick CP Incorporated. I'm Ed Zollers, and I'm going to be the guy who's going to be talking to you this week about what's going on in federal taxes. And we're going to be looking at a number of issues this week. First, we're going to start out with the case that the IRS is going to stop phoning it in now. So we'll talk about how that works. We're going to take a look at a reasonable compensation case as well as payments to a related party and how that worked out for the taxpayer. The Third Circuit Court of Appeals reverses the tax court on the issue of an all events test situation. We find we have a trust that ended up being tested for whether or not it had net worth that was too high to allow it to receive a reward of attorney's fees. And we'll discuss the IRS's release of the first of the guidance that's going to be required for the certified PEO program that will finally, a year late, get started. This is Current Federal Tax Developments, as mentioned, always brought to you by your State Society of CPAs and Nichols Patrick CP Incorporated. Want you to understand that we're getting into the CPE season here. We got a bunch of CPE coming up here in the month of May and June from Nichols Patrick for various state societies, coming up in Oregon, Michigan, Arizona, Iowa, New Jersey, and New Mexico over that period. Quick review of what we're going to be looking at. As I mentioned last week, I'm going to be in Oregon in Beaverton on the 26th and 27th doing tax research systems and methods and then assisting the survivors of the decedent's estate. We have a whole series of courses coming up in Michigan in the month of June. Don Cochran, who was on last week with me, is going to be doing tax update financial executives and assisting the survivors of the decedent's estate in Sterling Heights on the 16th and 17th of June. Robert Gilwee is going to be teaching in Livonia on the 20th and 21st, doing navigating divorce, tax, and litigation issues, and introduction to U.S. taxation of international transactions. Don will then come in the next day in Livonia and teach a session on construction contractors, special tax and accounting consequences on the 22nd. We'll go ahead in Troy, Michigan. Butch Rogers will be teaching tax preparer to trust or advisor on the 23rd and church and minister taxation on the 24th in Troy. We also have sessions that I'll be doing here in the state of Arizona. Both in Phoenix and on the web, I'll be teaching on the 13th of June, which will be investment taxation and Medicare tax and beyond. Then I'll do a pair of courses on the 14th, doing the Arizona Ethics session on the 14th in the morning. That will include the mandatory 2 hours that the Arizona has dealing with AICPA ethics standards and state of Arizona laws and regulations. Then I'll also be doing an Arizona income tax update and review in the afternoon on the 14th. That might actually be helpful now that the legislature has finally finished up their work. And then I'll go on the 15th to Tucson. This will not be webcast. I'll be doing a pass-through entities advanced tax issues in Tucson on the 15th. In the state of Iowa, Butch Rogers on the 8th of June will be teaching a session and webcasting from Coralville, a church and minister taxation session. New Jersey Society of CPAs will have a number of courses there. In Verhees, we're going to have Joel Rosenfeld teaching real estate partnerships, getting in, getting out, and getting taxed on the 21st. Jeff Christakos will be teaching on the 22nd, financial estate and tax planning for individuals over age 55. James Blair will do a Social Security session on the 23rd. And Robert Gilwee will be in on the 30th in Voorhees, dealing a course in red flag issues, areas the IRS attacks and examination. Also in New Jersey, moving over to Roseland, Jeff will pick up financial planning strategies for life wealth cycles on the 23rd, and Jennifer Elder will teach accounting and auditing comprehensive annual review on the 29th in Roseland. She'll also be teaching that same course in Jamesburg the next day on the 30th. Finally, in the state of New Mexico, we have CPE coming up in June. Butch Rogers will be there on the 29th, teaching oil and gas taxation nuts and bolts. Then he'll go on to Roswell on the 30th to teach the advanced oil and gas taxation course. Again, remember, sign up for continuing education with your state societies, because now is the time of year we start doing that. With that, let's go ahead and consider moving forward to our cases for this week. And the first situation we're going to look at here is a little issue the IRS had. The IRS issued an announcement on a policy change on the 6th of this month. That policy change, it was related to a little problem. At a conference held by the National Taxpayers Advocate in the state of Iowa, a number of people complained that the IRS was using phone calls to initiate on-site audits. and that this was causing major confusion among clients. Practitioners indicated that the real problem here is it's tough to tell taxpayers about IRS, about, you know, fraudsters who are posing as the IRS, because the taxpayers, if they get a call to start, and the issue in this case was to start an on-site audit, well, they are not sure. Look, you got to tell them that that's a real call, but this other call that's asking you to go and pay money is not a real call. While those of us who work with this all the time and those inside the IRS may immediately recognize the difference in those two calls, it's a complicated issue to explain to somebody who's not dealing with the IRS day in and day out. You want to have simplicity in the message. Unfortunately, the Internal Revenue Manual had suggested that for on-site audits, that the IRS agent should initiate contact via the phone. It looks like, talking with other practitioners, that outside of Iowa, many of us in other states hadn't seen that as the norm for how the IRS would initiate an audit. I suspect in a lot of other areas, the IRS personnel working in that office became aware that, you know, there's going to be confusion over these fraud calls. We're just going to have to start mailing these things out. Unfortunately, though, the Internal Revenue Manual still suggested doing it the other way, and apparently, at least in Iowa, it was still being done that way. So based on that, that then got lots of coverage. Tax analysts picked it up as a story. And so for all of those reasons, the IRS now decided, and they announced this week, in an abundance of caution, they're going to revise the Internal Revenue Manual and going to state now that the IRS will generally not initiate contact for an exam via telephone. This is probably a very good thing because it'll be helpful to tell clients that the IRS is not calling. And if you get a call, it's not really from the IRS. However, this is going to be short-term relief. Please remember that Congress last year decided to allow for third-party collection agencies to be used to collect money for the IRS. Those agencies almost certainly are going to be calling on the phone. And unfortunately, it probably won't take long for the scammers to simply move over and play the collection agency routine for the IRS. So we'll have to watch. It's still complicated to communicate to clients what is and is not a valid call from the IRS. What you really have to communicate to your clients is if they get a call from anybody claiming to be with the IRS, representing the IRS, or doing anything with regard to the IRS, they need to have them contact you. That probably means that you would need to get a power of attorney if it turns out to be legitimately the IRS. But the problem is, you know, I think both Congress and the IRS, it's difficult for them to focus on the fact that these people, taxpayers, just don't regularly deal with the IRS. And it's very difficult for those of us trying to protect the taxpayers to explain the difference in the types of calls that are considered okay and the types that aren't considered okay. We'll just have to see how this goes. Hopefully the IRS begin to understand that the use of the phones, IRS and Congress, the use of phones for these issues, while they may be cost effective from the IRS's perspective, they are causing major problems due to the fraudsters who are jumping on anything they can get to make things work. That creates major problems for us. Well, we'll move on then past that. Let's go ahead and take a look at the next thing we have up and running. This is the case of H.W. Johnson, Inc. versus Commissioner, Tax Court Memorandum Decision 2016-95, issued on May the 11th. This is the case of a concrete contractor who paid salaries to their officers as bonuses. The contractor was a C corporation. It also paid an administration fee to the LLC that was owned by two officers. The officers held 49% of the stock of the C corporation. The officers also had wanted to, and this LLC was formed to get together with a group who invested in a concrete supply operation. The problem they had was they were having difficulty getting concrete supplies of concrete for their contracting business. And some contractors had actually had to delay or basically stop jobs or not be able to take jobs because they couldn't obtain it in the market at that time. The majority shareholder, who was the mother of the two other shareholders, she thought it was too risky. She didn't want to invest in that, so she didn't have the company invest. So the two brothers, who owned 49%, went out and formed this LLC. The C Corporation paid them an administration fee. Plus, it paid them bonuses based on their annual standard bonus computation. Now, these bonus payments went into the seven-figure range. Not surprisingly, the IRS, They had kind of stopped for a little while after we went to the 15% qualified dividend rate. The IRS decided these probably weren't worth as much as they used to be. Now they're looking and saying, wait, it's still double taxation. So the IRS is now getting interested, appears to be getting interested again in these excess compensation cases in C-Corp arrangements for closely-held C-Corp. So you need to be aware of that. So the IRS said, wait, they overpaid the brothers, and this administration fee, it's not clear what it was for, so we think that should be totally disallowed. It was a $500,000 administration fee. However, it turns out that the tax court, looking at the situation, decided that, in fact, these payments were reasonable. It found that, you know, the IRS said, wait, the rate of return of this company is less than comparable companies. Now, the tax court didn't like the IRS's expert, but even using the taxpayer's expert, the rate of return for the years in question for an independent investor would have been slightly less than the average that the taxpayer's expert came up with using the source the taxpayer's expert used. But the tax court found that merely being below the average rate of return for a couple of years for a company that historically been very successful did not show the compensation was out of line. The court also noted that minor changes in the compensation would have brought it into line, so it wasn't as if they had hugely overpaid, and so the court found that those were legitimate payments. But the IRS said, well, wait, okay, that's fine, but there's still this payment to this LLC for administration. What in the world's administration, and why does it matter? And there's no contract with the company. We don't think they got anything for the administration services. The tax court in this case said, well, you know, it may have been informal, but in fact, clearly the company got something here. They were able to get a sustained source of concrete. They were able to get better prices than they could otherwise. This was solely due to the brothers, and the brothers had went out and done this on their own because mom didn't want to take the risk. So it's perfectly okay to compensate. They also disagreed, the court did, disagreed with the IRS's position that, well, the brothers, you know, had this obligation as officers of the company anyway, so we were just, you know, in essence, this payment is something that they should have gotten from them as officers. The court said, no, they were risking their own money. They were risking their own, you know, they had their own money in the game, and totally separate operation. This $500,000 fee for arranging for this work was totally reasonable, and yeah, it could have been documented better, but the court wasn't too upset. That said, probably if you're advising a client, it's going to be best to make sure they do better job of documenting and maybe come up with a better description than administration fee for what you're paying for. Obviously, all of those got the IRS's attention. And as we've seen in other cases, some of which you'll note if you read this case, the IRS has won those cases at the tax court where it wasn't quite so obvious. This was a very good fact case for the taxpayer. Be very careful if your facts are not nearly as clearly good for the taxpayer as they were here in the Johnson case. In the Johnson case, the taxpayer's facts were simply a lot better than they would have been otherwise. So that's probably the major reason why we had the positive result that we did. Next up, the Third Circuit is going to reverse the tax court in the case of Giant Eagle versus Commissioner. This is case number 14-3961. It is reversing tax court memorandum decision 2014-146. The case was issued on May the 6th. In this case, the case involved, and we had discussed this case previously a couple years ago when it came up, Giant Eagle gives fuel rewards to their customers who buy their groceries at Giant Eagle. A lot of grocery chains do this these days. I know a lot of them here in the Phoenix area have that sort of program where when I go and I do my shopping at my Safeway, as I run up numbers and spend more money at the Safeway, I earn the right to get a discount on buying fuel. And I can either buy the fuel at the grocery store if my grocery store had a gas station, which it doesn't, or I can buy it at related vendors. Now, of course, Safeway's on the hook for that. They either, in my case, be Safeway. It would be they either have to eat that lower fee when I buy from them, or they have to compensate the station for which I actually use a reward. In this case, the question became, could Giant Eagle actually deduct those accrued but unpaid rewards amounts that existed at year end? Obviously, at the end of December, there's going to be a number of customers who have the right to buy fuel at a lower price, but they haven't yet done it. Now, Giant Eagle can clearly estimate those numbers. There's no question. And it can very accurately estimate the usage. Those statistics are pretty easy to come by. The question becomes, though, can we deduct it? Under the all events test, and this is the test here, so we're looking at the all events test. What the all events test allows us to do is take a look under all events, have all events occurred that establish both the amount and the fact of a liability. There's no question in this case that they could reasonably estimate the amount of the liability, and they could do it very accurately. You don't have to get the liability exact. You just have to be able to accurately forecast it. They could do that. That's not their problem. But the argument had been that all events had not occurred. They don't have a liability until I actually go buy the fuel. The IRS had argued, and the tax court had agreed, that because of that, that created an issue, especially because in the case of this program, tax or individuals, their customers, had to redeem the rewards within 3 months after they earned them. If I don't go to the gas station within 3 months and fill up and claim my reward, I lose the right to that reward. The issue becomes, was that a condition precedent to absolute liability? Generally, if the taxpayer, if the other party has to take steps and it's not merely an administrative step to be taken, the general rule is the all events test had not been satisfied. Now, based on some cases, the courts had said it's satisfied if the person just has to go buy something. But the cases in question, and this was the key difference of the tax court that are also cited by the majority in this case, those cases had been ones where there was an absolute liability that never went away. This one went away after 3 months. The tax court found that that failed the all events test. But the Third Circuit majority said, no, it didn't. Giant Eagle could not withdraw that offer during that three-month period. So it was an absolute liability. Somebody just had to go buy gas. They could estimate the number. Now, the catch here is, please remember, this is a Third Circuit decision, which is good if you're in the Third Circuit, but it was also a split decision. And I discussed this back on the Sophie case. We talked about how you would claim a deduction for mortgage interest if you have two owners of the home who aren't married. That was also a split decision. The concern is that in other circuits, we may get a different result. And the fact that the Third Circuit decision itself wasn't unanimous suggests that we may find that in other circuits, you may find the majority of judges on those panels might end up going the other way. So just caution your taxpayers who are claiming it. But obviously, if you're in the Third Circuit and you have an arrangement, something like this, clearly it's something that could be useful to you. Next up, the Alterman Trust. Alterman Trust versus Commissioner 146 TC number 14. This case deals with the case of a taxpayer who is seeking reimbursement of their legal fees as the prevailing party in a lawsuit. In this particular case, in the tax matter at hand, the case involved a transferee liability situation. That is, there was a liability due, assets were transferred to the trust, and the IRS was seeking to collect tax, would collect those monies, claiming it was being used as a dodge. It turns out the IRS eventually gave up on that, found they couldn't carry the position, that it was not going to be a legitimate position. So they dropped the position. They lose, you know, they give up on the case. Now the taxpayer is looking for a reimbursement of the fees that they had incurred. Now this gets us into a problem because for trust, there's an interesting problem we've got here. Trust under these rules for being reimbursed fees have to meet a net worth test. There's a bunch of issues. This case, if the trust was worth more than $2 million, it could not get the fees even if it was otherwise found to be the prevailing party. In this particular case we're talking about here, the only issue before us at this point was whether or not the trust simply would fail the net worth test, at which point then nothing else mattered. So the IRS had moved for summary judgment based on the simple fact that their net worth was too high, they couldn't prevail. The question became, do we have a net worth test here? And if we do, when do we measure it? The taxpayer argued, wait, it's transferee liability, and you're supposed to measure it based on the year in question. Well, they're saying there is no year in question because it's somebody else's tax liabilities, not the entity that's trying to get reimbursed. And so because of this, there, you know, the $2 million test doesn't apply, or the standard federal liability test applies, which in that case would have applied as of the date they filed in court, which was many years later when the value of the trust was much lower and would not have failed under the regular federal test. Well, the tax court disagreed. The tax court said in a transferee liability case where we deal with something like this, the year of the tax assessment of the liability against the original party is the year for testing. In that case, the value of the trust was clearly worth more than $2 million at that date, the fair value of the assets of the trust. The trust agreed with that. So the bottom line was that the trust could not possibly prevail in this case. So for that reason, in the Alterman case, the tax court had provided, and the in this case, that they couldn't qualify. It found the taxpayer's logic that there was no possible year to be effectively absurd, saying, look, the year was printed on there, the year they were going after the tax. That's the year you've got to follow. Finally, we're going to talk about a new program, a program that was supposed to be running this year, but unfortunately, as we discovered, the IRS didn't get it running as I tried to get myself back to my regular screen here for those of you on video. The IRS is rolling out the regulations for certified professional employee organizations. This is Treasury Decision 9768, Temporary Regulations 301.7705-1T and 301.7705-2T, and also proposed regulations found at Reg-127561-15. These are proposed regulations 313511-1, 301-7705-1 and 301-7701-7705, that should be -2. All of this issued on May 6th. Now, those of you who don't remember the certified PEO, let's talk about what it was meant to do. The general rule is if I'm an employer, I'm responsible for making sure the payroll taxes are paid. Now, many of our clients are using payroll services or PEOs to take care of those issues. Generally, a PEO is payroll service plus. In the case of a PEO, what they end up doing is they take care of all the employees. They take care of their, let's say, their fringe benefits, their profit sharing plan issues, their, you know, qualified plan. All those problems are taken care of. They take care of all the HR resources. The problem in this area is what happens if that PEO turns out to, even though it took the money from the employer to pay the payroll taxes, it just pockets the money. We have a nasty case a couple of years ago that we discussed in our courses on citywide transit, where it was a really bad fact pattern where for 6 years it hadn't been paid. Well, what happens in the case if somebody does that? The problem is the taxpayer or the employer is still responsible for all those payroll taxes. What Congress decided to do was outline a rule what they passed at the end of 2014, which was supposed to be in place for 16, but wasn't, that would allow us to establish a certified PEO. If a taxpayer uses a certified PEO, hires one of those, and they basically turn over their employees at the location to the certified PEO, there are certain tests that have to be made, and the PEO, the certified PEO agrees to be treated as a certified PEO, then all the responsibility for the payroll taxes goes to the certified PEO, and if they're not paid, the employer is protected. Obviously, considering cases like citywide transit, this is not a bad thing to be able to make sure your PEO is certified. The problem was the IRS never got the program running by July 1st of last year, which they were supposed to do to license these people so they could actually start offering the service beginning of this year. So what we ended up with now is the IRS is finally, a year late, ready to get running. In the proposed regulations, they outline the rules to be met by these organizations to be certified. One important issue in this area is there are things that are to be done that have to be in place. If you have clients who are like this, the applications will start July 1st. Also of interest to your A&A partners, there is work for auditors that will be required. These entities will have to get audited financial statements, and they're going to get those statements, and they're also going to need reports on their working capital update on a regular basis. All of these are in play. The proposed regulations all deal with how this is going to operate once we actually get it started, and your non-certified PEO clients, the ones who would hire certified PEOs, how they'll use it. You want to keep your eye on those rules as they go to final, probably, or at least temporary regulations by the end of the year, because what we want to know by then is how it's going to work. And you want to discuss with your clients whether it may make sense to either ensure any organization they're working with is a certified PEO, or if they want to try to make sure that the organizations you know, that they maybe want to move to a certified PEO for the end of the year. So certainly keep your eye on this program. It may be a very useful thing, both for if you have a client who may be a PEO, they probably want to become certified. And it's also an issue for clients who just aren't, like most, they aren't going to be these organizations, but they may very well want to use these organizations. You should have a discussion with clients about why it might make sense to go ahead and use a certified PEO. Okay. This has been the current federal tax developments here for the week of May the 16th, 2016. As always, current federal tax developments are brought to you by Nichols Patrick CPA Incorporated and your State Society of CPAs. Be sure to visit us at our website, currentfederaltaxdevelopments.com. There we have articles on all these developments that we post during the week as these things take place. We also have there the link to this video, and we have the video or audio. We have both there if you want either one. You can also download the PDF that has articles describing how all of this worked this week. You know, all of these things we talked about. So we have full articles giving you many more details about these cases. And we'll post, as we say, updates during the week on all the events that take place. You can also sign up there for an email that will give you updates as we post them. Next week, we may end up posting at a slightly different time, and it may sound a little different. I'm going to be in Toronto, Ontario, Canada, next weekend, doing presentations up there for an organization. And because of that, I'm certainly not going to be able to take all the equipment I use when I'm at my office for this. So it may sound different. The microphone definitely be different. And we'll see if I can do the online the way I'm doing, or if I'm going to upload. So just fair warning, maybe a little later next week and may sound a little different, but we'll try to get everything running. But in any event, be sure to join us next week, and we'll talk about the updates that are occurring under federal taxes next week.